Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hi, everyone. So we're back from a bit of rest and recuperation after a busy period of FPL, just to be met with yet another busy period of FPL as the big double looms large within which many of us actually will be boosting those benches. It's been a little while for us, but I have podded fairly recently. I had fun above average just before the break, although I did kind of just end up getting drunk and heckling them a bit at one point. There's too much agreement on that pod, Lucy. It really, you know, sometimes someone's got to come in and go, actually, that's a bit stupid. It was great to do. Great time with Breaker and Adam. And I don't know if they're ever going to invite me on again after I did heckle them. But hey, they said they had a good time. Anyway, sorry we come a day late, busy with real life commitments and stuff last night. So we've had to come on Tuesday. It does mean that a lot of the international kind of stuff has happened now, and we've got a double game announcement and things like that. And I'm back with Lucy as per. You're all right. Did you have a good week? You just switched off from FPL and just enjoying it, weren't you?
Yeah, it was great. No Southampton losing, no red arrows on FPL. I did manage to catch a cold, so it's probably for the best we didn't record last week. I thought it would have been a lot of coughing and sneezing. I've quite enjoyed the break. That's probably a bad thing to say on an FPL pod, isn't it? Oh well. We are who got the assist. Whilst Twitter still exists, despite the best efforts of Elon Musk, you can find Tom on the main account at WGTA_FPL, and you can find me at Lucy Hynett. On the pod today, we will meander through the events and issues surrounding the upcoming game week, the players to consider, the captaincy shouts, and the usual stuff within the limited choice of a double game week. We will also look at how this affects different chip situations, with the double fixtures towards the end of the season now confirmed, and then we'll move on to any other questions. We're recording on the evening of Tuesday the 28th of March. Most international break games have concluded, so we await the end of the week press conferences with cautious optimism.
Yeah, I think there's lots of stuff about whether that game week 31 for Newcastle and Brighton might happen as well. And maybe there might be announcements at some point, but if there isn't one, the usual calendar folk have said that just assume there won't be one and it'll be later on in the season. Cool. All right. The first thing, I guess, we should do the mini league update very quickly because we can actually do a full one for now. What a big thing to mention is last week I said that someone was in second. And I saw that this week they scored just 29 points and fallen from like 400 to 4K.
Ouch.
So it was quite thinking about FPL again, it was quite a annoying week for many, but hey, I've got a feel for that guy. In terms of the mini league itself, quite a few moves and shakers and quite a few respectable scores this week, despite it being quite a low scoring one, thinking back to how it was. In 10th, it's Villains, Chris Hughes with a 66. He did captain Watkins, so he must have had a decent team there. In 9th up from 13th, what would Jesus do? Rob Brooks, he got a free hit, took a free hit, and only got 58. Boris Jovacevic, Heyho Bukayo, 55 points. Again, Kane captain for him. Hanyu's, we get to a Saka captainer. Christopher Blakeman, 64 points for him. In 6th, Havertz captain for Victor Sunday, took a -4, 56 -4, stays in 6th. In 5th, Josiah Berardazian, the Eternal Flame, 53 for him. In 4th, another Saka captainer, Saka Potatoes, Alex Terry, up from 7th to 4th, 75 points for him. And 2nd and 3rd, both of them got 67 this week. That is Daniel Strand in 3rd and Arav Mendirata in 2nd. Arav's actually just 8 points behind the leader, Mark Bleakley, who only got 45 this week. Bold Tony captain didn't pay off for Mark. So yeah, from I think it's about 30, 40 points in the lead. He's definitely looking over his shoulder a lot more now. Maybe we'll come to the market forces in a bit, actually, and bring that in another point in the pod. But should we quickly reminisce about the game week that happened a couple of weeks ago? I know, it wasn't the best, was it? It didn't go very well. So, I mean, we both got the same team pretty much. So, yeah, I mean,
it's an identical team now, isn't it? Because
yeah,
of
I think it is.
bunch of players. Yeah. Well, we have identical teams. We got identical scores at 49. I'm assuming 49, is that correct?
Yep.
A lovely red arrow. I think it was probably just one of those weeks where the colour of your arrow was dictated by your captaincy. And I think that was a pretty tight call for all involved. And particularly after Arsenal played that epic in the Europa League. And unfortunately, we were on the wrong side because we went for Kane. If you went for Saka, I'd be surprised if you hadn't Green Arrow. But yeah, we just didn't. So we didn't get one, despite having 11 players. It wasn't the week to go with five at the back, though, was it, either?
No. Lots of cheaply lost clean sheets, yes, I'd say. Both bought Chilwell and Watkins for Brighton defender and Haaland. I think both of us opinion, didn't we? So, yeah, I mean, it's just one of those, really. As you said, captain choice was basically it. Didn't drop that far, did you? I mean, 49-ish, 50-ish wasn't too bad, I don't think, in terms of the red.
No, I think I dropped maybe 6-7K. Yeah. It wasn't a disaster, but it just wasn't very good.
Yeah, I've dropped like 4K to 14K. So, you know, it's one of those things where, hey, it is what it is. And you can just move on very quickly if you're like, well, just catch and see. I mean, fair play. I was speaking to someone the other day, actually, and it turned out from using one of the captaincy analyzer things, I'd only captained Saka once this season compared to most people kind of captaining him three or four times. And that's, you know, last week. And also the double game where we both captained Salah 25 over Saka as well. And I was just wondering, like, all right, I'm very good at separating my FPL from team affiliation, but I do wonder whether there's some sort of anticipation of disaster when it comes to not captaining an Arsenal player. Maybe there's something about that that makes me think, oh, I don't want to do it. I don't know. I feel like maybe I should try to rectify that at some point, or maybe come back to that, because it's been a while since an Arsenal player has been captainable, and maybe I've just not been somewhere in the recess of my brain. Maybe there is a football fan left who is still kind of
they will never keep this up, is what you're telling yourself, isn't it?
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Never do this. It's Arsenal, they'll always grow it up. Can't be true.
Exactly.
Obviously, as a Southampton fan, I completely identify with that feeling, but yeah, probably with more reason than you.
Yeah, fair play. Nikki Bandini on the Guardian Weekly a few weeks back, she's an Arsenal fan as well, and they asked her, but when are you going to feel like you might win the title? And she says, and I definitely empathise with this massively, if we're 4 points ahead on the final day, that's kind of when I think most Arsenal fans, you can't accuse us of being entitled, at least, you know, maybe some Arsenal fans on Twitter who perhaps aren't geographically proximal to the club, if I put it sensitively, may see that a little bit differently. But I think the most long-term fans are, yeah, we're not an entitled bunch, that's for sure. Definitely no crowing from us. Let's move on swiftly away from football to the more fun world of fantasy football.
Is it more fun?
I don't know.
Well, it's when you're a Southampton fan, it is actually more fun. Yeah.
One first question we got in this week actually was from the Fantasy Brain, who asked, do you have five hobbies which are more fun than fantasy football that we should take up? I was just like, it's a week after, dude. It's a week after the fact. We've got double game weeks to come and you're still like feeling a bit down about it, which is almost fair enough. I suggested things like, you know, tiddlywinks, you know, cooking, extreme ironing, you know, all that sort of nonsense. But yeah, I mean, I think when we kind of start to get back into it, it'll be all right. But just to kind of start to touch on everything in terms of 29, looking at the fixtures themselves, they're not great, are they? It just definitely feels like a case of quantity over quality with them. They're not quite the easy doubles we've seen in times past. Like taking them apart one by one, they really are quite rubbish. Like other than United, Brighton, arguably actually Villa, and none of the form teams, in inverted commas, have a double, and relying on flaky defences like Chelsea or Newcastle and Brentford recently, post World Cup as a whole, actually Newcastle's the best defence and Brentford's the third best defence. But you know what I mean? Like it's pretty crazy. But couple that with the news emerging about game week 34, United, City and Liverpool, I think have decent enough fixtures in that, and people are kind of thinking, oh, okay, maybe there's a time to look at that 34 bench boost we've gone and touched on in a bit. But it just feels like from looking at it again, it could just be a bit of a damp squib, couldn't it? This is the one we're holding out for. And here we are, pouring cold water all over it straight away.
I like how you're like, don't worry, guys, we're about to go into a double game week. Don't worry about your red arrows. Oh, wait, no, actually the fixtures are terrible. Don't get excited at all.
They're not terrible, but they're not fantastic. I mean, the team with the best fixtures is really hard to find. Like,
I think once you factor in form and kind of general trajectories, then I think it's probably Brighton, home to Brentford, away to Bournemouth. The thing is, that doesn't sound particularly interesting either, because I mean, we were fairly unusual in probably, you know, jettisoning Estupiñán. I know quite a lot of people kept him, but most people will be on at least two Brighton already if they're not already on three.
Yeah.
So it's not really that interesting from a kind of transfer point of view this week. So that's that gone. So then I'm kind of looking, and it feels a bit ropey. I'm looking at Leicester. I think away at Palace, at home to Villa.
Yep.
Is all right. I quite like Madison and Barnes both there. So, but yeah, I mean, the majority of them aren't good. And I do agree with you that we've just gone, ooh, big double game week. It's going to be great. And it probably isn't going to be that good.
I know. I mean, I had that as well. Leicester, obviously a new old manager for Palace, but both of those teams are in the bottom 10 for SGC. So Palace sit from bottom for SGC since the restart. Villa third from bottom as well. So it's probably them, you know?
Yeah, it is. And the fixtures around it make them particularly enticing, don't they? So I think it's that you've got those two fixtures we just mentioned, Palace and Villa. Then you've got Bournemouth. You've got away at City, which isn't great, but then you've got Wolves, Leeds, Everton. So, like, they're well set until 36 when they play Liverpool, and even then that's not particularly bad. So I think, yeah, Leicester are quite a fun one to look at, particularly. There's obvious reason why people are keen on Madison this week, but I think Barnes is quite fun too.
Yeah, I definitely mentioned Barnes in a bit. But I mean, it's not United, is it? That's for sure. I mean, I mentioned again the defensive records. I mean, admittedly, they've been a bit annoying since we've kind of doubled up on them since the wild card and things like that. But that double of Newcastle away and Brentford home for them, and people buying in, you know, Bruno as well seems to be quite popular. And again, it links to that idea that it's kind of the wider sort of fixture list, because after Brentford, they've got Everton at home in 30 and Forest away in 31. Most people have got a free hit for 32. 33 Spurs away, I mean, sure, whatever. And then after that, they have a decent run, including another double, which is probably going to be involving a Chelsea fixture at home. So, I mean, a Bruno buy for now probably isn't the worst thing. Again, we'll come on to it in a little bit, but I can see why people are looking at all of these players. It's just that looking at these doubles, coming back to them in the cold light of day or in the cold light of a week later, it doesn't look something worth writing home about, does it really? I'm sure it'll be great. It's just one of those things, and we'll come on to it in a bit, but I'm kind of a bit skeptical about dropping -8s, -12s, chucking out all of the proven assets just to chase the upside of this double. Anyone who did listen to Above Average FPL will probably have heard my view on this already, but hey, we'll do it again. Now, are we still bench boosting? There's definitely a question which I've seen. I've only briefly gone on FPL Twitter because, you know, I don't want to hurt my eyes too much. But I have been on a little bit. And obviously, since the 34 announcement, there's definitely been an element of heads being turned a little bit about this. So a friend of the pod, Adam Pritchard, said there's, you know, lots of Twitter talk about not using the bench boost to 29, saving it for a potential 34. Is this just the usual Twitter international break nonsense, or is it something that has merit? And Goops asked a similar question. Whilst everyone piles into the bench boost 29 as the best time to use the chips, is there a genuine case to use it in 34 instead? And I think what we're going to both say is it depends on your team, right, Lucy?
Yeah, literally, the first thing I have written on my notes there is, before I say anything, it's team dependent. So yeah, before I say anything, it's team dependent. Do I have to expand beyond that? I probably should, otherwise we haven't got much of a pod going, have we?
That's true.
I think if you're already tripled up on Brighton and United and your Madison and you're very well set, then I might be tempted. I'm not that well set. I will probably have two or three Brighton and two United, but no Madison, or Madison and not two United, something like that. I don't think I'm that well set. And having looked ahead, I just don't think that I will get that close to a really good team in 34. And the other point is that I just don't like how many variables there are between now and 34. I think it's been quite tough, actually, to hold nerve on 29, having wildcarded when we did, to kind of get ourselves through another 4 to 5 weeks maintaining a squad of 15, given that we will, you know, undoubtedly have unforeseen injuries and suspensions and various issues. To me, that's quite a lot of anxiety, having to maintain the 15 for that longer period, knowing that you've already played your wild card. Obviously, going back to the team dependency thing, if you have a wild card, then by all means, look at 34. I think 34's doubles are better than 29's doubles. But if you are in the vast majority of people's position in not having one, then I do think it makes me quite nervous. I think a lot of people are already saying, oh, I've got yellow flags everywhere. How am I going to get a bench boost out this week? Well, if you consider that it's just been 3 weeks since we wildcarded, waiting another 4 or 5 could be just a bit too much. I think that's pretty much where I am on that one.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, just reflecting what Hindu Monkey, whoever he is, said, at this point, is it worth bench boosting 4 singulars just to jettison the chip into space? And I think that's the absolute crux of it. Like, the bench boost, I think we've seen every year. And again, the argument could be made, well, why didn't you bench boost when Gabriel did a goal and Marcelo did a goal, et cetera, et cetera, and so on and so on. Obviously, I think we're aiming for this one. But those who did have the foresight to do that, well done. Congratulations. I would shake your hand if I could. But the bench boost is always such a milestone, a millstone. A milestone is a very different thing.
No, a milestone.
It reflects on what you were said in terms of how our team is set up and how we make transfers, and such a huge, like, limiting factor of manager choice. So I'm almost happy to be relieved of its treacherous grip.
I think it can be really distracting for people if you have to keep worrying about maintaining that 15 instead of actually scoring some points. You're like, oh no, that bench player that I'd never normally worry about is injured. Oh, I'll have to use my transfer on him. It just becomes really distracting. I think we've already said that maybe 27 was better because we're on the cusp of it going too long. And I just think, get rid of it. It's fine. The only thing I would say on that question about if you should bench boost with 4 singlers, I do wonder if there might be an opportunity there that you might be missing. I think obviously if you're heavy on Arsenal and that Leeds fixture is quite a good one, I think that's fine. But there just might be a few where you can look at it and say, maybe there's a risk in a -4 that might be worth having a go at. 4 singlers feels a little bit conservative.
Maybe. I mean, I think the single game week has almost feel like a pro for me here in terms of making it. But obviously, it's very, very much about where I am. But most people have got Arsenal players, 2 or 3. If you haven't, you're likely probably either chasing a lot or you've not done particularly well, so you've gone really, really, really punty. But Arsenal versus Leeds, post-Conte, Spurs versus Everton, Haaland versus Liverpool, I think those are the likely singulars, and none of them are particularly bad fixtures, barring obviously Haaland being fit. And I think in 34, unless you've got a wild card, as Lucy mentioned, to set it up, it starts to get a lot dicier at the time span, the lead time into that. And it just doesn't seem worth doing effectively. I mean, in terms of what I'm doing, I'm probably going to be bench boosting with 3 singlers. And those singlers are 2 Arsenal home to Leeds and Kane versus Everton. And I'm perfectly fine with that. Even though it's double game week and you could go big on double game week, the fact the singles are actually decent enough to, I guess, not quite cover off taking a hit, but more that, okay, if you take a hit, obviously the thought process you go through is, oh, the 2-point appearance will kind of cancel out the hit to some extent, and then it's the case of whether the player that you bring in will beat the player that you've sold on the fields during the game week. With a few of the players that people are looking to sell, I don't know whether I can believe that's the case. So if you're selling Saka as part of a -8, selling Kane as part of a -8, in a lust to get doublers, I just can't get behind that, really, which maybe, again, is a sea change from who I used to be.
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. I think there's a lot of what we say in terms of strategy will come down to kind of game style and how you prefer to, like, manage risk and your appetite for risk. You know, I completely understand where you're coming from in terms of saying hits to remove Arsenal players as they play Leeds doesn't seem that wise. That said, I think there are decent arguments to say that you take the punt against them, and if you get lucky, it could be really profitable. It's just balancing up the likelihood of that happening. And it probably speaks to who you are and how you want to play the game to a certain extent. It's not something I'm particularly keen on. I don't think I'm going to take more than a -4 this week. But I can understand why people see the attraction of a risk and a gamble at this point of the season. I just probably wouldn't personally do it.
Yeah, if you're not where you are, if you're not where you want to be and you just think, right, I'm going to go hell for leather, sort it out, take some hits and just hope for the best, hope for the upside, hope the fixtures go well, then, you know, fair play. I just don't like it, given that we've spoken about it already. Like, this year, as I'm sure you guys will know, I'm so clear that I like to avoid hits every game week because it's basically giving points away. And that means that I go into the week with a handicap, constrains my ability to get a green arrow, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like I'm probably going to go for one move this week and kind of hope, and I'm really sorry if this is you, whatever, but I hope other people make the mistake of being lured in by the bright, shiny double game week and take -8s, -12s. You might need to do that, but equally, you taking those points away takes the sheen off the actual final score unless something freaky happens, because we've all got quite similar teams and the players people are bringing in aren't exactly going to be those who make the difference against people like me. So yeah, I guess my born again hit phobia is likely to continue this week, and I don't know, maybe it's the biggest double of the season, but I'm still thinking I won't take a hit, so maybe I am born again and maybe I have changed, Lucy, that's for sure. Probably just before we kind of head into the players, just we should do market forces very quickly, which again kind of backs up what I mentioned about people selling players who have a single. There are a few, of course, sales that can be justified. So Almiron's been sold by almost 500,000 managers. It's a shock that those people are actually holding him, but I do think he was
top of the list, wasn't he, the previous week?
He was. I think he was third. He ended up being third for Inns. Yeah, but you know, it's amazing how people will always. The phenomenon is that okay, I've got a player who I need to buy at about X price. How am I going to choose which player that is? Oh, it's the player who has scored the most points in the price category. Obviously, Almiron's got a fair amount of points this season in a kind of budget to mid-range midfield option. That's why people just bought him in last week before he got injured. It was obviously quite unlucky. I think it was like Friday at 4 p.m. when it came out in the Paraguayan media that he was injured. But yeah, I'm not surprised to see most of people selling him on. And Saliba and Mitrovic also in the top 10, the top 5 for transfers out as well, unsurprisingly. But then, you know, you get into the likes of Odegaard, who's got 125,000 sales. That's likely to include me and likely to include you by the sounds of it by the end of the week. Kane with over 100,000 sales. The likes of Saka, Martinelli sold by about 50,000. I was shocked to see that 55,000 managers own Son as well. 55,000. Wow. To sell him. Amazing. And Haaland also sold by 71,000. And interestingly, you've got people selling Tony too, because of that being on the ninth yellow. And on the other side of it, Matoma, continuing his ascent. People must have heard my weeks and weeks of saying, oh, I bought Matoma once and it was great. I want a bit of a part of that. Like 200,000 buys for Matoma. I miss when he was beautiful and a differential. Isaac, out of nowhere, scored a brace last week. 160,000 people bought him in. Solly March, 138,000 transfers in for him. And Fernandez and Shaw, taking up top 5. Again, both over 100,000. So quite a lot of people making a lot of moves. And yeah. It's definitely interesting. Before we get into the players, I think what was a really interesting question we got asked. We got it was an old school one. For long term listeners, used to do a correspondence thing with when Anthony was in your seat, Lucy, and you've got like people writing in like second captain style on email. And Dave Seated FPL did email in to ask us a question. I don't know whether something that's kind of touched his mind when he was a shower thought or something. But he said many people are removing Haaland for a couple of weeks, and the main replacement seems to be Watkins and Havertz. The theory is it gets you two extra fixtures. However, with Chelsea versus Villa as a double game week 29 fixture, it restricts you because many have Kepa, James, Chilwell, about 50% of the game own a Villa defender. For example, he said he owns Mings too. He says it's not possible, therefore, to have Kepa and Watkins both return or Havertz and Mings. So instead of two fixtures, we actually have one return plus 2 points. Many will take a hit to do that kind of move around, thus negating potential benefits further. So my question is, how much you could have players matching up against each other in double game week, especially on a bench boost because you can't avoid it? Are you only interested in minutes or potential returns? And how do you kind of navigate that whole thing about players playing themselves? I actually think that was quite an interesting question. It's probably a bit of a nerdy one, but I thought it was fascinating because I actually looked through my whole team and I can go through who's playing who, but I counted it up and basically it's only the slight majority of fixtures, assuming that I do the move I'm probably going to do, of players playing in games which are kind of uncontested. So 13 of the 27 fixtures I'm going to have this week are contested, where I've got a forward against a defender. And it's kind of, it's definitely an interesting one. It's one where you kind of just, I don't know, I feel like I close my eyes and pray in those situations. What do you think?
Well, to go back to the original question about selling Haaland and who you sell him for and thus whether you can really get the kind of benefit out of it. I think the key thing with Haaland was that you were selling him, I think the majority of people were selling him a week earlier than that. And if you bought in Watkins, I think you're probably looking at selling Tony when you back out of it. So I think it's a little bit less straightforward than Watkins for two fixtures versus Haaland for one, or, you know, there's kind of like a few different permutations around that. And I think I'll probably hold Watkins for quite a while. So it doesn't quite work in that, from that perspective, but I do understand what he means in terms of whether it's worth the transfers. And we did explore this at the time, that it was basically three versus one. And I thought at that point it was worth it. Whether that becomes true, I don't know. For the kind of broader question around the double game week and how much your players are playing each other, I think to a certain extent, and I know it sounds really unsexy and boring, but I think a lot of the time it's just kind of like covering off both eventualities, you know, spreading your bets a bit. Like, as much as I would love to be in a position where I could only make gains, that that's just not how it plays out a lot of the time. I think you just have to be realistic that sometimes you aren't going to make gains on every fixture, and sometimes it's just about kind of like just covering all the bases and seeing how it turns out, and one of your players might go big. I mean, obviously, you know, a striker getting a second goal against a defender does far more for the striker than it does against the defender. So, yeah, I know it's not very exciting, but I don't look at it in a lot of detail, and I just think it's just one of those things, because the majority of these players you're going to own for more than 1 week anyway. So it's just one of those things, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we all want to make it all gains, like some sort of protein shake, bro. But I think the reality is that it's impossible to do, especially on a week like this, where it's quite difficult. I mean, I thought it was notable when I was looking through it that kind of the majority of my players who are playing an uncontested game are the singlers, you know. And it's very kind of rare that you kind of have this situation with the doubles kind of being shaken out like this. But I mean, hey, it is one that maybe you would slightly consider. So maybe you might think, oh, I haven't got a player in this set of fixtures, so maybe I want one of those. And in the case of someone like Bruno, I haven't got a free hit in 32, as we'll speak about in a sec. So I'm probably not going to buy him anyway. But the fact that I've got Trippier and Botman facing him, and then I've got Henry and Raya facing him as well, again, might make me kind of think, I'm really probably going to be captain Rashford. So I'm doubling down on against my own team if I do that. So it's another sort of ante in the column. It's not the big sort of no, but it is kind of another one that goes in the column. It all feels a bit gnarly, basically.
Yeah. I think that is a fair point, that if you do come to like marginal decisions between A and B, then maybe you might want to factor that in as a kind of, you know, it heightens your ceiling if you can avoid players you're kind of playing against, if that makes sense. But yeah, I wouldn't make it a decisive factor, if that makes
no,
sense.
No, definitely not. Well, I mean, personally, I suppose without that 32, pre-hit 32, it kind of makes things a little bit different for me. So maybe should we start with you in terms of the key kind of men you're looking at and what you're looking to do this week? Obviously, recording on the 28th of March. But hey, I mean, as it stands, what are you thinking of doing? It's kind of similar to me, isn't it? It's like Odegaard out and probably Gabriel out, isn't it?
Yes, those are the two moves that I'll make. As you said, I've got that free hit, which I will probably play in 32. So 34 is probably more in the back of my head than it will be for you. I guess, you know, to a certain degree, you've got to kind of fill in 32. But anyway, we'll come on to that. So Odegaard out is a certainty, most likely for Maddison or Bruno. And Gabriel is also very likely. That'll be Shaw or a Brighton defender, I would expect. I can't afford to do Bruno and Shaw and have the funds for Haaland. So it's going to be have to be, if I want Bruno, it'll have to be a Brighton defender. If I have Maddison, I can have Shaw if I want Shaw. I'm not really sure on Shaw because of the Casemiro absence, because I don't think that's great news for their defence. But obviously, I'm a bit reticent to bring in a Brighton defender having just sold one. So, you know, it's one of those things. But I do think Brighton do have the best set of fixtures, as we said earlier. So it seems a bit silly to pass up tripling up on them when I can, because I'm free hitting in 32. I had looked at more complex moves involving Salah's return, which would probably have meant losing Kane next week for Haaland. But I just think Liverpool's double probably isn't strong enough to entice me to do that. And I'll probably look at just getting Salah in for 34.
Yep.
I had also toyed with Saka out for whichever of Maddison or Bruno I don't buy for Odegaard. But I think I'm probably too cautious. I think there's an argument for doing it, but I think that's just, I just couldn't see a way I would get him back in easily once that you factor in that you need to use your transfer on Haaland in 30. I just thought that I would just spend the next 4 or 5 weeks doing exactly what I did earlier in the season, where I said, oh, I really need Saka, but I can't work a way to get him back in again. So, yes, I think it's just that -4. There's a very remote chance that I bring in McAllister and triple up on Brighton, but it's a very all eggs in one basket thing that I'm not totally sold on. So that's one of the more distant options, I think.
Yeah. No, so sure for Gabriel and then someone, probably Bruno or maybe Maddison.
Well, if it's Maddison, it's sure. If it's Bruno, it can't be sure.
So it had to be,
like, Brighton.
Okay, so like an Estupiñán or a Dunk or something.
Yeah.
Got you. So I think most people are looking at that kind of binary, won't they? Brighton defender and Bruno, or Maddison and Shaw. I don't know, maybe there's some obscene team. I think maybe I could do that, actually.
Yeah, but I think some people have got more money than me, so they can do the the Bruno and Shaw move. I've seen quite a lot of people on Twitter saying that. I would expect you can.
Let me check if I can. Yeah. I spun it one of those, isn't it? But I mean, I haven't got the luxury of a lovely shiny free hit, so I can't. I can do it. Yeah. Sorry, that sounded so nonchalant. Yeah, I can do it. Yeah. Anyway. Oh.
So many glares right now.
I know. It's just so much money. That's my problem. It's definitely something that I guess is going to wait Friday, basically. Not that any of you who are listening maybe some of you would have made the move early, but wait till Friday, that's for sure. But for me personally, in terms of what the move will be, I think it is probably buying a midfielder over buying a defender. So I could, again, remove Odegaard, Gabriel, or remove them both. And I think I need to bear in mind the fact I don't have a free hit for 32, as you've referenced a few times, and as I've referenced a few times. And that means whoever comes in needs to be a relatively medium to long-term pick, because otherwise it means I load up another transfer I've got to make. And oddly, that probably rules out buying Bruno. I'm guessing that's going to be kind of the main sort of FOMO pick in terms of people transferring. And it also probably means that extra Brighton investment isn't a good thing, because again, it leaves me with a further transfer to make further down the line, or I go into 32 basically accepting the red arrow. I have to commit them as basically having 9 players. I know it's not the case for most of you, so it's not something I'll go into completely, but you know, that's kind of my situation, which is why I'm looking mostly at a certain ilk of players, and I'm not interested in Bruno, I'm not interested in Shaw. I'm just kind of going to be hiding behind the edifice of Casemiro being massive for United. Therefore, after Casemiro is not in the team, Bruno will forget how to kick a ball, the United defence will concede all over the place, and you know, I've got my own players playing against them. So it's kind of like, all right, I'm contesting that. It's fine. So it's kind of, I think it's Odegaard to a doubler for me. I don't really like any of the defenders in for Gabriel, apart from Estupiñán or Dunk, which again, same issues about that 32. So that kind of, it kind of is quite helpful actually, because it narrows my choices a little bit rather than having the whole sort of field to play with. I can't get Salah because that prices me out of Haaland in 30. But basically, any other midfielder is sort of in the mix, and you kind of, the artificial boundaries around 32 kind of help kind of home in on a few individuals. So there's a few players who I've discounted for other reasons as well. So Bowen and Benrahma. I know that Hindu Monkey is very keen on Benrahma, but at the same time, both of them have got the Europa Conference League hanging around, which I'll be hoping to go deep into. So if I buy them, invest in that team, we'll come on to West Ham in a bit. I'm not sure about that at the moment. Really, that what that means is I've got Maddison, Barnes and Gakpo or Hakpo sat as the kind of the top three as it is. And given what we've said about the fixtures, Maddison and Barnes are the ones to choose between. Maddison's on eight yellows, whatever that's worth. But recent underlying data is great for him. Pure old talisman. Barnes-wise, a bit of a zag pick. But what I really liked were a couple of things. One, Rodgers. Oh, God, am I really trusting Brendan? Why have I written this? I've just written unquestionably. Rodgers says that... Roger says that he's interested in he loves his role in the team as a goal scorer. I don't know, I wrote that and I wrote it unquestioningly, just copied and pasted it from an Athletic article, and here I am kind of thinking, what was I doing earlier on? And
okay, also, so let's move to your next reason, because that one's
That's terrible. And also the fact that Palace and Villa, as well as Bournemouth, all seem particularly vulnerable with conceding chances on the left flank. Very nice sort of differential, I suppose. But most people go for Maddison. I don't think people were talking about Barnes very much. So, I mean, it's like a studious pick, but it's kind of whether it's going too far beyond the keep it simple, stupid, or just buy Maddison. Yeah. I'm not sure where I am on that. I quite like him. I think he's always been one of those who could explode, if that makes sense. And it's one player in my team which is slightly different, which could make all the difference. Like Matoma did, Lucy. I don't know if I told you about that.
And how much? But the other thing you like to brag about, apart from Matoma, is how much team value you've got. So there's no obvious reason to avoid Maddison.
Yeah, but maybe not. I mean, it's just one of those, isn't it? Like, you know, he's got eight other cards. He's carrying a slight injury. It's one of those things, isn't it? But as we said the other week, if Madison's not fit, then Leicester aren't investable anyway. So it's a bit of a catch 22. The only other one I mentioned was Gakpo. And he could stay in the team for a long time towards the end of the season, basically. I did own him. But
he lasts a long time over actually scores some points.
Yeah, his personal, his individual days is nowhere. So it's just kind of not worth it. It's kind of one to come back to in 32 when I will be buying a couple of Liverpool players. It's looking like Maddison or Barnes.
For people that aren't really rich like you in FPL terms, I think Barnes is really useful, because I think there are lots of reasons why you might not be able to stretch to Maddison or Bruno or kind of those two popular ones. And I think Barnes is probably the next best pick after those two from a midfield perspective. I think he's 6.7.
He is
6.7. So I think that's pretty good value for what he is. So yeah, I'm not cool on Barnes by any means. Like I quite like him, but I just think maybe Madison's just the keep it simple, stupid pick.
Maybe. There's only 3 points difference between the two of them, which surprised me. But obviously Maddison has missed like 5-6 games this season, whereas Barnes has not. So I'm guessing majority of that is just appearance. But I don't know. It's one of those that I'm interested in. He's got 9 goals this season, which is that equals the most goals he's ever scored in the Premier League. So yeah, Brendan Rodgers, goal scorer. Now, do we go into Utara? Do we go into 4.5 million Bournemouth midfielders? No, let's leave that one be. I do like the idea of Bowen. I've seen quite a few people mentioning him. Has performed well for me.
The problem with Bowen is his price, isn't it? I mean, I think actually West Ham aren't bad in themselves. Like in isolation, I quite like it. The double isn't awful. It's Southampton, Newcastle. That's all right. It's just what you can get at their price points that makes me think that they're not a great pick. So Bowen, for example, he's only 0.2 million cheaper than Maddison. But for that extra 0.2, wouldn't you just go for it? And if money is an issue, I think I prefer Barnes just for that run of fixtures that's just so good. And I think defenders, again, I don't hate, but I just don't like what they offer versus other options at the kind of 4.5 price point. So I don't think they're like going to do particularly badly. I just don't think they're going to do as well as some other options at a similar price point. One's Ben Rama, but you could also get a Brighton midfielder.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think there's a good question from Jeff Pedder. He asked for low-risk, high-reward punts for 29. Mentioned Barnes, mentioned Ben Rama. I think the idea of getting in a second or third Brighton midfielder is definitely interesting, especially if you've got a free hit to use in 32. Because it's that idea of kind of compound differentials, isn't it? The idea that, okay, you're kind of both covering all the bases, but also playing aggressively is kind of a bit counterintuitive. But I think I quite like that.
I haven't ruled it out myself, to be fair. I think all three of them offer excellent value, which is fairly unusual for a team to have that kind of value at that kind of 5.5 point. Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for going for that strategy. And actually, when we come to it, if you're into risk, obviously this isn't low risk, this is high risk, but potentially high reward. I think you could do worse than them for a captaincy shout as well.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. No, we'll come on to that in a little bit. FPL Hong Kong, they asked Bruno, Madison, or both, probably both, if you can.
If you can, yeah.
Depends if it's a hit, a little bit more iffy, but potentially. And Dave asked what your thoughts on West Ham. Kind of quickly mentioned that earlier on, but very fantastic, as Lucy was kind of referring. But that Europa Conference League makes things very unpredictable for West Ham. And they're a team, just in general, you'd be kind of concerned about investing in. I think that's probably why I'd kind of have a bit of a yellow flag about buying them. I like Bowen. He did very well for me in the first half of the season, did very well last year for me. Apart from that 1 week I didn't caption him and everyone else did. Not bitter. it's one of those where it's a player that, or a team that you kind of, you're a bit cautious about investing in, especially because it doesn't seem like anything's changing, and they've also got the fixture congestion with Europe, and all of those things put together make me kind of wonder. Maybe I could be talked around on Bowen. Maybe someone will have a killer stat somewhere, but I couldn't see anything in particular. In fact, the best stats that I found were, from looking at it, Barnes versus the teams coming up, and the fact that they gave up chances on the flank that he plays on. That was anything that kind of drove me towards Barnes a little bit. Plus, I think there were a couple of people out there looking at Madison data and saying he's a bit more kind of playmakey at the moment, which again, it's pretty cool. Helpful if you're kind of getting someone at the sharp end like Barnes. So yeah, I like Barnes. But anyway, friend of the pod, Sam, FPL Pricey, writes in to ask us, Lucy, linked to all of this. He says, it feels like it could be the opportune week to take aggressive moves to optimize your team for the rain doubles ahead. But is there a delicate balance to strike? Oh, he's been on the pod before. When thinking about ousting high-performing players such as Saka, Odegaard, or Kane. Oh, for me, it's selling one of them. For you, you're keeping Kane, right? So it's the same. We're kind of both kind of playing it cool. The defense has obviously not been something that you've been particularly writing home about. So it's that's kind of a bit of neither or. Although the Leeds game, you'd be perhaps expecting a clean sheet. Nonetheless, though, I mean, I was good-naturedly, I'm going to say good-naturedly, heckling Baker on above average the other week about his plans to take a -8, which involved selling these players. And I saw on Twitter earlier on that he's still on it to sell. And I saw that James on Planet is also selling Saka. I mean, I love both of them, but it's very much kind of a play-it-your-way situation. Use it several times. Don't throw the baby out the bathwater. It kind of just feels that way when it comes to Saka right now, and quality over quantity as well with the players. Like, yeah, you get an extra game, but Saka versus Leeds feels like a really difficult sofa sell. Like one of those players that you sell pretty much knowing it could well hurt you. I just quite like it's going to be a differential, and in the nicest possible way again. It feels like that's a mistake I've done in the past, and now it's kind of a mistake I want other people to make, if that makes sense. Or I think it's a mistake, so I'm going to not be doing that.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier, in the sense that it depends on two things. It depends on, A, how much you like risk and how much you like to take a gamble. I think we're probably both on the lower end of the risk scale, so that probably is a pretty determining factor. And then the second factor is probably where you're ranked right now. I think someone in the top 20K is quite happy with where they are, i.e. you, probably doesn't need to overthink it too much. if you're really chasing hard, then I probably would be tempted to move and kind of fingers cross it. I'm in that kind of limbo state where I'm about 50k. It's not a disaster. It's not exactly where I want to be. So I'm probably not going to push it too hard. But yeah, I kind of don't want to be too prescriptive about this because I think it does depend on who you are and how you like to play the game. I think it's tighter than perhaps people on either end of the debate would like to have you think it is. And I think you just need to think about how you're planning ahead as well. So if you are in a position where you don't have a free hit, then you need to think about that. If you are in a position where you do have a free hit, how can you best target fixtures and kind of plan in a sensible way that doesn't kind of assume that you'll be able to make your ideal transfers every single week? Because I see people plan, you know, 12 fixtures ahead or something ridiculous and then say, oh, the X and Y and Z have got injuries or suspensions and I can't get out the team I wanted to get out. I mean, that's just a fact of the game. That's part of what you are. You need to have a flexible plan. So as long as you have one of those and you're comfortable with the risk you've taken, then go for it. I mean, I'm probably not going to, but
yeah,
you know, depends who you are and what you want to do, really.
Yeah, there's that. There's also the buying Haaland back. So as you mentioned, we both mentioned a little while ago, I mean, he has fallen in price, so it's probably a little bit easier now, but it's still one of those where if you bought him 11.5, you sold him at 12.2, and you're kind of like, oh, I can buy him straight back at the same price that I sold him at. Just make sure you can still buy him back before pressing confirm on your moves this week, especially if you're like Lucy and can't afford Bruno and Shaw.
All right.
But it's just one of those. It's situational, as it always seems to be at this time of the season. So for me, I haven't got a free hit in 32, which again puts me off tripling up on Brighton. Again, put me off of buying another United asset or two. I'm probably going to have to hope that my trio of McMitrash, which sounds like a handsaw sponsored by McDonald's, I'm going to have to hope that they're going to be good enough for me for the time being. That Brighton concede, and as I mentioned, that because Casemiro is a huge loss to United. And in game week 32, my flexible plan is to basically play with 10 men because everyone else can be free hitting, and I should probably have most of the players that you want to buy. And I'm going to have to probably deploy the 5-2-2, which is going to be a great week for me. That one, Lucy. I might not be here. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those where your sins will find you out, but you know, the bus fly effect, all that sort of stuff, it's like kind of my decision in 25, which ultimately, because of the way the fixtures fell due to the FA Cup going completely off piste in terms of how everything fell out, it just kind of meant that free hit, it really wasn't worth playing, but I couldn't have known that at the time. So now I've made my bed and I'll have to lie in it effectively.
Yeah, I mean, you've had two freak occasions, you know, all of the stuff with the Queen that made you gain a whole load of transfer value, which you like to lord over me. That's one thing where you benefited, and then obviously there was that one that just swung back against you. It's just been one of those things and one of those seasons where freak occasions have played out and kind of skewed people's fortune slightly. I think for people that don't have a free hit, it's just a case of plotting a sensible middle path that just allows you to cover the big rank threats and big hits, and you just try not to worry too much about the periphery of the squad being as good as other people's, I think, really.
Yeah, it's gonna be. I mean, I'm not the kind of person these days who gets particularly overawed by the FOMO, but I think for a lot of people, especially if you have kind of spunked all your chips, it is going to be hard to not want to get in a Bruno, because I'm sure that wagon's going to gather pace over the course of this week, and it's going to be hard to not buy in. You know, if you can't get to Bruno and Madison, you know, making the choice between those. If you've got, if you haven't got the space to again do another Brighton midfielder because you've got to take another hit, it can really start to mount up if you see what people are doing out there. So it's, as you said, it's just a case of kind of just seeing yourself as being somebody who's not in the main drag of what people are doing, and planning accordingly, and receiving that advice and actually interacting with it in your mind and thinking, actually, that probably doesn't apply to me too much. Well, it's interesting though, I mean, because you're on the main path, as it were, in terms of what everyone's doing, the main quest, whereas I'm off kind of piddling around with side quests. I mean, it's increasingly difficult, I think, to differentiate especially, you know, we were talking about earlier on that it's quite, there's limited choices in a double game week. I mean, do you feel like it's increasingly difficult to differentiate from the prescribed path now?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that can be quite depressing for people. I think you and I have both found over the last few weeks, it's just like, oh, we're doing this again. And there's this set of moves that we must deliberate between, but there's literally like three targets we can discuss. And really,
I love that. The pod is just comes down to, yeah, Monday morning. We've got a pod tonight, Lucy. Oh, not again. Oh, dear. I feel like people might go to other pods and be like, oh, yeah, they're really upbeat and they love FPL.
Yeah, if you want upbeat, like we're not the people for you.
proper adult look of neither of us are parents, but we've kind of like, you know, parents, the adult perspective of FPL, where it's kind of like, oh, no, not again.
Yeah, so I think it kind of feel a bit like that. So I was trying to think about kind of the factors that have made it feel quite prescriptive and quite dull, for want of a better word. And I think there are probably four main factors I considered. And I think two are probably here to stay, so we're just going to have to suck it up. And two that I think will change. So the two that are to stay, I think mass content creation and the whole kind of idea of having a team game where people follow particular content creators. I mean, realistically, that's just going to grow. That's become more and more and more of a factor. And I don't think that us whining about on a pod about that is going to make any difference whatsoever. So we might as well just accept that. If you are really bothered about being different, you're just going to have to just ignore the obvious template picks. And I think that's just how it's going to be. And the other issue is that I think Haaland, for the majority of the season, has taken captaincy out of the game. And assuming he stays in the Premier League, I expect that to be the case for quite a long time. I think the two that will change, one that's had a massive influence this season, and we've discussed on multiple occasions, is Arsenal, Rashford, and a few other players, Trippier, for example, providing crazy value and thus making them kind of must-buy obvious picks that just kill a spot effectively. You know, until now, none of us were really kind of considering selling Saka. You know, there have been a number of players that are just obvious must-have picks. Obviously, next season, that will change. Those Arsenal players, Rashford, Trippier, they'll all receive price increases. It will start to balance out the game a bit more. Obviously, your Liverpool and Chelsea players will probably have a bit of a drop, but they'll also improve as players, so that will make it more interesting. And I just expect the pool of players that we're choosing from to be more interesting. And I think the other issue that has pushed us this way, and I think will be different next season, is just because we've had all of these postponements and slightly bizarre things happening on the fixture list, and that probably won't fall in exactly the same way next season. So I would expect us to be slightly less prescribed when it comes to the second half of the season. And particularly because we won't have the bonus wildcard that we have this season to flip things around again, that hopefully we can all just steadily diverge and not be brought back together again by wildcards and all that kind of nonsense. So I think, you know, some things will stay, but I think there will be more flexibility beyond this season. Or that's my hope, or it's going to be very dull.
No, I think you're right. I mean, it's really, just to take these point by point, it's really fascinating to see how things have changed since we first started. I mean, we're both on the Fantasy Football Scout forums, weren't we? Like, back in our younger and more formative years. And now with this kind of era of mass content creation, I mean, it's not us who have got the massively amplified voices on Twitter. But what you said about it being a team game, I think that's a really strange development, but one that I've definitely seen. Like, most of the team template, obviously, but then it's kind of team free hit 32 and team no free hit. And also, you know, teams like Team Raptor and Team Andy Let's Talk and Team Late Riser, and not copying others, but at least following others' philosophy and making similar moves. Some obviously are copying, but there we go. And that creates, as we've spoken about a lot, its challenges, and also creates its sort of openings, opportunities, its edges. I think that's really interesting. I guess in the old days, there was this camaraderie, wasn't there, between us engaged managers, like, and most of the boys in the community, before all of the money got involved, frankly, used to talk to each other, and it used to be like a really nice place to be, where we used to kind of be like, oh yeah, it's us against them, you know, and us being the engaged managers who are nerdy enough to look into this, and everyone else being like the casuals or whatever, but now it's no longer the case, you know. So it's all about sort of educating people, which is fine, also selling your stuff, advertising, and it's led to a very kind of homogenous place, and that's fine. You know, it's the nature of competition, I guess. But yeah, it creates a sort of lust to share in success rather than take risks, and that can be an edge, and it can also be like something to bear in mind. Like, we've seen players like multiply an ownership out of nowhere, like a character like Matoma suddenly become going from being an FPL manager secret to being over 100% EO really quickly. Is something that I think we've seen it kind of slowly creep up over the years. But remember, like
Matt Doherty
at Wolves, he was like 4.4 or something when he first sort of people started noticing him in FPL circles, and it took quite a while for the mass adoption to happen. I'm talking like kind of 7 or 8 game weeks, whereas now within a couple of weeks, everyone's on this guy. Yes. No one's ever heard of before, because there's wider spread of information. So yeah, definitely more of a factor. I agree with that. Haaland take captaincy out of the place. I love that, frankly. I just think that captaincy is so annoying. It's like we saw it this week, and we saw it in other weeks. Just recently, Salah versus Saka again. But splits and captaincy are always incredibly irritating. I like being strategic about picking up differentials. I don't like basically choosing red or blue on the roulette wheel, which is what captaincy is if there's a split. And I've not had good outcomes from it. And maybe that's kind of framing my response to it, but I'm happy for that. And yeah, it feels like the Leicester season with Arsenal, Rashford and Trippier, the players that reduce the space for a battle, as it were, because those players are all truce. We've all got to own them. Like Trippier, 99% EO for the majority of the season amongst the engaged core, no matter where you were OR-wise, and postponements. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that that's... there's definitely a bit of blowback about content creation and things online, but I think it's just symptomatic of the season and the external factors which have led to the season being like it is.
I think the content creation thing is being obsessed about because of those other factors. I think people just need to sort of zoom out a little bit and think about why all of the content creators, or you know, a big majority of content creators, are landing on the same picks week after week, and it's because all of our options have been reduced.
Exactly. And it's you know, we've spoken about double game weeks. Stop double game weeks. Just stop them in their tracks.
Let's have like a, you know, 50 game week season.
Let's have a mini game week. Let's have a game week for 29.5. That's what I want.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah. Can you imagine the hits, though, if you had that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it would be interesting, though, just to see if people were lured in or people would just take it or free hit for one of those. But yeah, it's just... Yeah, we're all converged this year, and all these facts that Lucy has pointed out have all probably come to a head and created a bit of a perfect storm for many things to happen. But yeah, I mean, I look at all that, Lucy, and think this is why I like Barnes over Madison and Bruno.
All right, do it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Just love
a ginger. Right, okay, on to the captains. So, Rashford, keep it simple, stupid. I mean, it feels like that's the captaincy. Kieran Farger asked if Madison is worthy of the armband this week. I mean, we spoke about the United game not being the best game in the world. But I mentioned already about being on the wrong side of captaincies recently, and 25, 28, we're both on the wrong side of those. And I feel like the EEO infused a sanctuary of Rashford from a psychological standpoint might be enough to make me think, yeah, all right, I'll go there. I mean, if something does change, I just think, screw it, I'm going to buy Bruno, then maybe I would just captain him and go the whole hog because he does like love a double. But, you know, I think that's very unlikely.
I love how you've gone from, I'm not sure I want to own Bruno.
I don't think I would put it that way. If I did buy him and I did own him, I'd think about captaining him. But I don't know. I'm like not likely to go past hurdle one. Let alone have to think about hurdle two. So yeah, that's kind of where I am with that. And Madison, you know, sure, it depends. But as Lucy mentioned earlier, I prefer one of the Brighton lads. If I was looking other than Rashford, I'd be looking at McAdonna, if you rate Solomon March, then maybe him. But I'd probably go with Matoma if I was going to go for a Brighton mid. Unless you're hoping to get lucky with McAllister. Maybe. I think one of those two is going to have my vice, but I think it would be Rashford just for safety reasons. I don't know, hopefully you've gone on the right side of EO and all that, reduce exposure, all of those things. Same for you?
Yeah, Rashford will be my captain. I kind of checked that on review because I was wondering if I was just being skewed by EO. But review has him projected as my highest midfielder anyway, so I might as well just do that. I think I agree on a Brighton midfielder probably over Maddison. I think it's quite tight. I think Bruno and Maddison and a Brighton midfielder are all quite good picks if you don't want to go for Rashford. But at this point, it depends basically whether you're chasing or not. If you're chasing hard, you probably don't bother with Rashford. Otherwise, I think you do. Yeah, I don't think I have too much more to add on that one, really. I think, I'd agree with the Matoma being probably the one I'd go for.
Definitely gains to be had. And if you're not like us, and you know, I know you're not particularly happy where you are, Lucy, but again, you're kind of sitting prettier than other people are. So I think, where would the cutoff be for you in terms of not captaining Rashford? Is it below the top 100K? Is it obviously situational and depends on the sort of manager you are? But I don't know. If I was kind of 250K plus, I'd be thinking of captaining elsewhere. I think that's kind of where it would be. If it was kind of like, all right, I can kind of attrition myself to get to kind of about 100K-ish at the moment. If I'm kind of 200K, you can probably kind of get there. I think if you're kind of below 250-ish, I think that's the point where you kind of start looking at Matoma or maybe looking at Maddison, perhaps, and maybe that's where Kieran is.
I think that's, I'd agree broadly with that. I think people tend to panic too much at this stage of the season. You've got quite a lot of season left and you've got probably a couple of chips to play or one chip to play, and you know that you're pretty well set for in terms of fixture planning, which not everyone above you will be. So I think it is quite easy to get drawn into, oh gosh, I've got so many ranks to make up, I need to start making big punts. I don't think you necessarily do, and I think it comes back a bit to what we were saying about compound differentials. So I wouldn't take captaincy risks for the sake of it, but for if whatever reason you're not into Rashford, then it would be Brighton would probably where I'd go, because I just think the fixtures are so good.
Yeah, no, makes a lot of sense. Cool. All right. Well, I think that's your lot. We'll be back next week, sort of mid-double game week again. So Lord knows what we'll do. Maybe we'll get a guest on so we don't have to do anything and just let them talk for a bit. Sorry, Jan. but hey, it's one of those things. I really just hope that the pod's not going to be dated again. Some big injury, Kane falls down the stairs, getting off his flight or something like that, which makes us look at Darwin Nunez or something like that. But hey, there we go.
Yes, indeed. We were Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on Twitter at WGTA_FPL, and you can find me at Lucy Hynett with two T's. If you enjoyed listening to this, please like and subscribe to the podcast. For new listeners out there, if you think you'll be coming back, please hit that 5-star rating across platforms like iTunes and Spotify so more people can enjoy the pod.
So yeah, that's it. Back next week. Enjoy the rest of the international break. We hope it assisted you and we'll speak to you very, very soon. Farewell.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.